everyone. This is Christopher, and you are listening to Orphan Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to exploring the universe of public domain media. Joining me today, and already breaking their New Year's resolutions, Barry and Lydia.
Hi.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We are going to start off 2014 by discussing The Terror from 1963.
Dun, dun, dun. I feel like we should have a lightning bolt sound effect right there. Ooh, that was good.
Maybe we shall. This is going to be our first Roger Corman film. Roger Corman has been pretty good about keeping a lot of his earlier works under copyright, but this particular title fell in the public domain due to the fact that they never put a copyright notice in the credits.
Roger.
Apparently no effort was made by Corman to remedy this when he had the chance, so there you go.
I'm curious if you guys caught that also as an uncredited director, Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, actually.
Sorry, I'll just let you get to your...
Step it all over my line! The film is set in early... I shouldn't have drank half this Bacardi before we started.
I was going to say, you were about to tell us what you were drinking.
It is a Bacardi Silver Sangria.
Wow, that's
the
way more exciting.
The sponsors for tonight's show.
Yes.
And Bartles and James bringing you margaritas in a bottle.
God. And we thank you for your support.
We should probably take that out just in case they sue us.
That's right.
They aren't actually supporting this. Here, our disclaimer is not being supported by any booze companies. And we're all over 21, so it's legal.
We're getting to the point where we need a disclaimer for every episode.
You know you could fix that by just kicking me off.
Yeah.
Don't
anyway.
Be too hard about that.
The Terror is set in early 17th century France and stars a very young Jack Nicholson as a soldier in Napoleon's army, André Duvalier. I can't say that.
Early 19th century?
No, I'm sorry. You're right. It'd be the 18th century. Or 19th. You're near 19th. You're right.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Yes. The early 19th century. It was like 1806, I believe, is when this is set. I'm just messing this up all over the place. Anyway, this makes his fourth appearance in a Corman film, previously appearing in Little Shop of Horrors, The Crybaby Killer, and The Raven, in which he appeared alongside a favorite of ours, Vincent Price, as well as Boris Karloff, who makes his second and, I believe, last appearance in a Corman film. Karloff, of course, a true staple of the classic horror genre. He was supposedly goaded into starring in The Terror as Baron von Lepp by Mr. Corman, who paid him a small little amount of money, but promised him $15,000 if the film grossed $150,000. Of course, whether it did or not, we'll never really know. I'm sure Corman apparently told him it never did, and so he didn't get the money. Karloff's scenes were shot over the course of about 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, much, if not all, of the location filming was directed by Francis Ford Coppola, as Lydia mentioned. And some scenes were purportedly directed by Jack Nicholson himself, as well as some Corman proteges, Jack Hill and Monte Hellman.
Yes, according to my Coppola book that I used as a syllabi for my Coppola class a couple years back, Coppola said that all the scenes in Big Sur with Nicholson apparently almost drowning at one point, those scenes were all directed by Coppola, according to Coppola.
Right. That's from what I've been able to research, that was pretty much, Big Sur. Corman sent Coppola out to Big Sur for a few days. Apparently he stayed there for about 11 and shot all the exteriors. We would be a little remiss without mentioning the important role of Helena or Ilsa in the film, played by the beautiful Sandra Knight.
Yes.
Knight starred in many horror films throughout the 50s and 60s, as well as many TV appearances. And she has the dubious, perhaps, distinction of being the only woman that Jack Nicholson ever married.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, she was apparently pregnant with his first child during the filming of The Terror.
That's right. She was Mrs. Nicholson during the filming. Yep.
Well, The Terror starts out literally on a dark and stormy night.
Perfect.
The Baron Victor von Lepp, played by Boris Karloff, is making his way through a secret passage under his castle, following a trail of blood, when, boo, a decrepit corpse jumps out on him, and then the credits roll. Do you love that scene? It has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
It's wonderful.
You know what? There's foreshadowing.
You think that's foreshadowing?
Well, I don't think it was intention. Well, maybe it was poorly planned intentional foreshadowing, but there's a moment later in the film that actually mirrors this with Jack Nicholson's character, Andre.
A little bit, maybe. Didn't quite have the jump scare that they played in the, I guess, what do you want to call it, the teaser at the beginning.
Yeah, a creepy corpse is much more jump scary than a pretty girl. So
yeah,
yes,
that's true.
It didn't quite have that same effect on us, but it definitely had the same effect on Andre.
Speaking of which, we see Jack Nicholson as Andre. He's a lone horse rider along a beach, lost and separated from his regiment. His compass is going a little haywire, so he can't find his way back, apparently.
Now, I am curious, how do you get separated from your regiment at a town?
Yeah, that's true. He mentions that he got separated at some town or another and then found his way to, you know, riding along a beach. Yeah, that compass must have been really, really, really broken.
Logic isn't very strong with this film.
No, I'm afraid it is not. Well, soon the exhaustion takes his toll, and he collapses into the surf. And he wakes and finds a strange woman. She doesn't do much speaking at this point, but she does lead him to fresh water.
Strange but beautiful, which of course is enough to make him follow her around and kind of harangue her.
Yeah, just a little bit.
He's a bit like a masher in this part. I mean, he's. You know, kind of, if they were on a bus, he would probably be squishing her. It just struck me that he's a little...
Pushy?
Pushy is a nice way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like a word with you. You never said goodbye to me. In fact, you never even said hello. It isn't an act of treason to talk to me. I'm a weary, disillusioned soldier, and you're the only pleasant sight that I've seen in 7 months. Go ahead, it's permitted for you to laugh. Wait, you haven't told me your name.
My name's Elaine. Come on, I want to show you something.
Well, she eventually does speak and introduces herself as Helena, and she leads him off and walks... Or she leads him on a little trip through the forest right and down back to the beach and then walks right into the waves of the ocean, apparently trying to drown herself. Andre.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth pointing out, I feel, that this is Jack Nicholson, and there's no – he doesn't have a different persona. He doesn't have a different voice. He's younger, but otherwise it's – I'm Andre Duvalier, and you're kind of going, he's all, I'm a French soldier. And you're like, no, you're not. You're Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lydia. This is my absolute all-time favorite actor. This was the guy whose performance in Cuckoo's Nest made me want to become an actor. I don't think there's any role Jack Nicholson could not play, except for maybe this one. This is
except
not his finest work.
Yeah, a Napoleonic French soldier. Yeah, it's a little, it is worth noting, I think, that they don't try to make any of the characters sound French or I would say act French, I'm a little perplexed as to why they would set it in France. It could have been anywhere, but they chose to have a French setting for a bunch of American actors. It was an interesting choice.
Well, then of course Karloff plays Baron Victor von Lepp, which sounds extremely not French.
That is true. Very not French.
So why was this German Baron in the French countryside or beachside, whatever?
Maybe he's not. Maybe it's just Andre who is French, and maybe we weren't meant to believe that everybody's speaking, you know, German or something.
I don't think German's known for their wide expanse of beaches.
No, but... I don't think so.
Maybe they're all lost and they're somewhere. Yeah, they're all lost and they're somewhere in Britain. That's how lost Jack is.
maybe Leo Gordon, who wrote the screenplay, just never was anywhere except for America.
Yeah, that's true. They're in Europe.
I think Roger Corman was hoping that no one in the audience was going to ask any of these questions during the.
Well, Andre tries to rescue the girl, but is attacked by a falconer or a hawk, I guess it was, while he's in the surf. And this is quite a hawk, and actually knocks him out, puts him under the waves. Jack once again wakes up from this. He does a lot of this. You notice in the first 20 minutes of the film, Jack's only awake for about 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the running time is Jack waking up and walking around.
That is true. There's a lot of walking around in this film.
There is probably more walking in any film we've watched so far on this podcast.
Yeah.
Even He Walked by Night didn't have this much walking.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Well, he wakes under the care of an old woman who is looking a little bit like a Katharine Hepburn and a Lion and Winner cosplayer to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, well done, Chris.
The woman claims that the only Helena is her hawk, who, of course, doesn't get along very well with Jack. And we also meet Gustav. Not sure his relationship with this old woman, but he's in her little hut enjoying some dinner or something.
Yeah, I kind of felt like he was sort of a servant / cast off, not really all there mentally, maybe. Yeah,
handyman. Well, yeah. Supposedly he comes across, she thinks he's mute, for one thing. We quickly learn later, again, late in the night, Andre wakes again and steals into the forest where he meets,
Helena.
We don't meet Gustav at that point. He meets Helena at that point.
Wanders around with her again.
Yeah,
I guess she kind of smooches on him a little bit there too.
She does. She does kiss him, and they walk off, and he tries to follow. But I like this. This is like one of those slasher films, but in reverse. No matter how fast he runs, he can't catch up to her walking. I guess it's then she disappears, and then Andre runs into Gustav, and we discover that Gustav can talk, although in a very raspy voice.
And saves Andre's life at this point. Andre Jack.
Quicksand. The girl was trying to kill me.
She knows not what she does. Her will is not her own.
You mean she's insane?
Possessed. She needs your help.
Help? How can I help her?
The castle of the Baron von Lepp. You will find her there. I can say no more. There's great danger. Find Eric. Eric knows.
Pretty sure I've read somewhere that France is, that's a big problem there.
Yeah. I all the time, you know, and in Paris, they're just running into these sinkholes. Yeah.
Andre goes off to find this castle of von Lepp.
But I love it the whole time the old woman keeps saying, there is no girl.
That was not, that's actually a pretty good impression.
Yeah, I've been working on that all day. Not really. But she also, as he leaves her, you know, he comes back and he says, you know, where's the girl? Where's the girl? And of course, there is no girl. And, as he's leaving, I love it. There's this kind of blurped in quick little line that you can tell was done in post-production where she says, please don't tell the Baron that I'm here. And she says it like really fast and kind of undertone. And it's, but, and you know, she's not even in the shot at the time. So I feel like a little bit, I feel like there's some afterthought kind of added in things in this film.
If you say so. I don't think there was a whole lot of forethought into this film.
Oh, yeah. That could be.
Yes, and Corman fans, don't forget, Gustav is played by Jonathan Hayes, who played Seymour Krelborn in The Little Shop of Horrors.
In the original one, I saw that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So this is a really good film as far as having a lot of early Corman regulars.
Oh, yeah.
The actors in it, it's interesting because the actors in it are all individually, I think, remarkable, but you put them, but it's such a weird mix. It's not that they don't do well together. It's just, you think, I mean, for one, really, Jack Nicholson and Boris Karloff in the same movie? Is that possible? I mean, obviously it is because it happened, but there's so many, it's like they're all these, I think, really good actors from just these really, I feel like really diverse in the end careers. I could be stretched.
Oh, no, you're right. I think it's really interesting how all these actors are in a film like this. And we could easily say it's a troubled film. I don't think, you know, there's certainly some script issues.
Yeah.
And definitely some plot and pacing issues. And then they all go on in such very different directions from here.
And I think do a fairly good job, have fairly, you know, successful careers. But it is funny because you do. I mean, I have to agree with Barry. I think this is probably the one role that Jack Nicholson is completely not convincing in. It's not that he's a poor actor. It's, I mean, half of it is just, some of it I think is the script. Some of it is, it feels so forced from him trying to be romantic. I just have a hard time seeing him as a romantic leading man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, you know, he's not playing, you're right, Lydia. He's not playing to his strengths in this movie. Jack typically, I'm just going to call him Jack because we're on a first name basis. Jack typically plays the smartest man in the room, and he's very good at that. Yeah. In this movie, he's wandering around in a daze. Most of his dialogue is in the form of a question.
And he is actually the dumbest man in the room.
Yes.
100% of this film.
Yeah.
He really is not ahead of anybody this entire movie.
Right.
No. No, he definitely spends the entire film reacting to everything that everybody else does.
Yes.
And initiating very little on his own.
I weirdly, and I hadn't thought about this before, I just now, you know, started to make it come out of my mouth, but I honestly think this movie would have been successful with just about anybody except him in this role. And again, not because he's not a strong actor, but because it's just not the role for him. So you could have gotten any number of other guys in here, you know, Henry Fonda or anybody else, which maybe Henry Fonda is a little old for it at this point, but he would have been very convincing as the kind of lost guy. But Jack Nicholson, it's hard to see it.
Well, yep. Well, this is back when he was a nobody, too. I mean, at this point, it really was like putting anybody in there. You know, obviously, I mean, now there's so much baggage with Nicholson. It's really hard not to look at the super movie star playing this role. I think Corman probably wanted us to think of him as an everyman. Well, you know, whereas just like 10 years later, you know, Nicholson has established himself as one of the biggest movie stars alive. It's really hard for us to see him as kind of the Bill Pullman kind of person this character really needed.
I honestly, and this is extremely, what's the word I want? I mean, this is very much my opinion. You know, I don't have any empirical evidence to back this up, but I think I really just have a hard time with the voice. He doesn't have any of that soft romantic tone. And I think honestly, if you cut his dialogue out of it, he does fine, but there's just, it sounds so weird to say this, but he just doesn't have any of that soft undertone, that kind of wistful lover thing going on. It's like he tries to, but he comes off like Christian Slater, creepy. Hey, I think you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. Okay.
That sounds more like Peter Lorre.
Well, but I mean, that's kind of how he sounds. Yes, I can help you with that. But I don't really know what you're thinking right now, but it's coming out of your mouth. Kind of creepy, guy. Could you back away?
I'd be actually interested, Lydia, if you haven't already, go back and watch, and I think he did this, he did this before. Go and watch The Raven that I mentioned with Vincent Price and Karloff, and I think actually Peter Lorre's in that one as well.
I love Peter Lorre.
Yes, he is.
I think that's what made me actually think of it. Go and watch that one and see if you have the same opinion of Jack in that film as you do in this.
I would be very curious to see that.
Yeah. Definitely check that one out. That's almost a little bit of a comedy, too.
See, I have to ask, and I know now we're talking about a completely different film than we're meant to be reviewing, but is The Raven the Poe? Is it a takeoff from Poe?
Yes, okay. It is.
So those of you listening, now you have another one to watch.
Yes, you do.
As well as me.
I don't know if that one's public domain, though. I think that one's actually managed to stay copyrighted.
So yeah, we won't review it, but we can select.
Yeah. Yeah, The Terror and Little Shop tend to be the ones that are always just kind of floating out there in public domain. But no, you're right. The Vincent Price, Edgar Allan Poe-inspired Corman movies are pretty well protected.
Yes, they are. They're kind of a little bit of more of his more famous early works.
Yeah.
Well, back to this film, Andre wanders again. You know, goes to in search of the castle, which I can't imagine was that hard to find. It is the quintessential, lightning backdrop, dark looming castle on the cliff,
complete with boulders dropping off for apparently no reason, trying to hit him and missing.
Exactly. And he finds the castle, and of course, as soon as he gets there, he sees Helena in the window, so he knocks on the door. And we meet the Baron Victor von Lepp, Boris Karloff. And let me just say right here that I am a big fan of Karloff.
Oh, yeah.
I just, there is something about that man. I love the way he talks. I love watching his face when he talks. He does this really interesting thing sometimes with some of his lines. He's just got one little side of his lip will curl up. It just makes it so interesting to watch the man do his lines. Yeah. So it was really cool. So he is definitely really great
he
to
really
watch in
is.
This film.
He's mesmerizing. Anytime. Yes. It's so funny. Even in the opening, that opening little blurb, he came out and I didn't really have my head in it when I first started watching this. And, you know, he walks toward the camera and he does all this. And I was like, that guy is so familiar. Oh, my gosh. He's so cool. Who is he? And I looked at him. I was like, oh, duh, dumb butt. So but no, he's fantastic to watch. You forget that you're watching an actor.
The things that everyone points to Boris Karloff as far as his fame are all the monster under heavy makeup roles.
Yeah,
and it's so cool to see him without any of the makeup and actually get him a chance to actually act and see him and how he acts and actually have lines. It makes it really fun
to see his expressions because he really
he
really just draws you in, his facial expression and just the way he carries himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not stiff. It's weird because you think that he would be stiff, but he's not. He's very, very warm, very personable, I think.
Yeah, I think, honestly, he's probably the highlight of the film for me.
Oh, yeah. No question. I agree with you both. I mean, Karloff is one of these guys, like, I would compare him to Christopher Walken or Dennis Hopper in the sense that his best work is terrific, but he's also been in a few dogs. But even in the movies that aren't good, he is fantastic. You cannot take your eyes off of him, and he has this authenticity and this charisma that sometimes surpasses the role or the movie altogether.
Well, Andre pretty much forces himself into the castle.
Okay, we got to stop. This is my favorite line in the entire movie. You knew it was going to come. But, you know, the Baron, you know, says, oh, there, you know, you'll be quite comfortable at the Village Inn. And Andre says, but I've had my fill of Village Inns. And I thought, haven't we all? I love Village Inns, but, you know, I can help thinking about the 2-2-2 and a cup of coffee. I was like, only if you're hungry. Anyway, I'm sorry. I love that line in this movie. It has nothing at all to do with the movie, but I just love it. I've had my fill of Village Inns.
It's also a fine example of the Jack Nicholson swarthiness that he carries in the film that you were kind of describing earlier there, Lydia.
What would a soldier of France be wanting here?
Shelter, for one thing. Permit me to introduce myself, Lieutenant André Duvalier, 5th Chasseur.
Baron Victor Frederick von Lepp. I suggest you will find better shelter at the Village Inn.
Thank you, Baron. But I've had my fill of Village Inns.
I want IHOP to grab that clip now and, like, use it. I've had my fill of Village Inns. Well, then come to IHOP.
I'm not Jack Nicholson, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. Well, after he forces himself into the castle, pretty much gets a room from the Baron, he asks about the girl he saw in the window. But the Baron, of course, tells him there's no girl here, and asks him if it looks like this woman that's in this portrait. Well, this portrait turns out is the late Baroness who had died 20 years earlier.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
Well, wait, and then I do want to mention that, there's a point where the Baron says the only people who live here are myself and Stefan.
Right. And oh, yeah. Goes
I
Stefan.
Love him. He's fantastic. He, for me, I mean, I wanted Dick Miller, who plays Stefan in this, I wanted him to be the hero in the movie. I couldn't recognize him just offhand. And of course, he was in a ton of things, mostly just bit parts. But you recognize him. He's one of those, kind of character players that you're like, oh, I've seen him in something. But his voice and his expressions, and there's a moment later in the movie where he kind of bursts in on the old woman. And I love him in that scene. Anyway, I just thought it was worth mentioning that, again, another very, very solid actor. He's the servant in this, but I love his part. I wanted him to be the hero through the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. No, this castle houses the talent of the film between Karloff and Dick Miller. Yeah,
it really does.
No, I agree with you. Dick Miller is one of these actors that you don't know what you've seen him in, but you know you have seen him in things.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm kind of puzzled about it, guys, because, I mean, you know, we already talked about how this is just not Jack Nicholson's finest hour, but it is kind of odd that Dick Miller really rocks this movie. I mean, he just holds the screen. Jack doesn't hold the screen in this movie.
No, he really doesn't. Jack is honestly forgetful. I mean, in a few years' time, you could go talk about The Terror and like, oh, yeah, that's one of that Carla from that Dick Miller. And who was that other guy that was in it?
Guy. I wonder if this isn't before he kind of found his – I mean, we did mention that he's pretty young in this. And I almost wonder – you know, so many actors, they learn how – they learn their angle. You know, they learn how to create that presence. You know, and I think probably they learn that over time. I think very few actors or actresses walk onto a set with that innate ability to just take over the room. And I almost wonder if this wasn't prior to him having that experience and really knowing how to kind of eat up the screen, you know?
Oh, I'm sure it is. No, this I don't want to make this sound like that we should use this film as a way to, you know, lower Jack in his standing. I think that you're right. It's just he was so young and so early in his career, he truly hadn't found what it was that was going to make him the Jack Nicholson that we know
today. Exactly. I think that's really it. And again, it's not, I don't think it's specifically poor acting on his part. I think it's honestly, and to be completely fair,
it's lack of experience, I think.
Not even that. I honestly think it's just a forgettable role. I mean, it's that guy who's wandering around, and he doesn't do anything in the whole movie. If you think about it, everybody else does something. He's the only one.
And he just wanders.
He's basically the crutch that moves the story from one scene to the next. But he doesn't
act. He's the terror's MacGuffin?
Yeah.
He really does. But if you think about it, he doesn't do anything. And I think it's just the way that the role is written. I don't necessarily think that it's a negative reflection on him. I think it would be difficult for this part to be really memorable unless you had an actor that was really specifically suited to it. But I think you could have gotten anybody in it. It probably would be a pretty forgettable role, especially with the strong characters that he's surrounded by through the entire movie.
Well, again at night, Andre sees the girl from his window, and he tries to go down to her, but there's some spooky noises and a locked door between them.
Ain't that the way?
Yeah.
There's always a locked door between you and the girl. Wait.
When he threatens to shoot through the door magically unlocks for him, and he heads out. Of course, there's no one in the hall.
So he goes out, and does he find her in the crypt at this point?
Let's see. I think actually does he find her, or does he run into Stefan first?
He probably runs into Stefan. There's a lot of running into Stefan at this
there
point.
There is, and this is a great example of there is a lot of walking in this movie. There's just a lot of people walking around, and they kind of don't do anything. They just walk from one place to the other, and they follow each other. And I know this is the part where afterwards Stefan says, well, I kept at a distance so he wouldn't see me. But I don't really remember what happens between him leaving his room and then Stefan talking to the Baron. And I watched it twice.
I think Andre does follow Helena, and she leads him into the old chapel.
Yes.
And then, of course, disappears. And that's where he runs into Stefan.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah. And Stefan makes it pretty clear that he'd rather Andre leave him and the Baron alone.
I think this is where he says there's nothing here but an old man and his decaying memories.
Believe me, Lieutenant, I have no desire to interfere with your departure from this castle.
You seem very anxious to be rid of me. Is it because you're afraid I might find out about Eric?
Eric?
So there is an Eric. That at least was not a lie.
Lieutenant, please don't involve yourself in these dead matters. There is nothing here but an old man and his decaying memories. I beg of you, leave him in peace.
Good line.
Much like Lydia was kind of alluding to earlier, Dick Miller has some of the best scenes and best lines in here. Some of them with Karloff, but most of them, of course, with Jack. He just, as Barry, I think, said, he rocks this movie.
He does.
He really does.
you come to find out later, too. I mean, not a lot later, but you kind of get the impression that he has been the one holding the Baron together. You know, that, and, you know, later on in the movie, there's a point where he says, oh, he's had these kinds of fits before and he'll be okay in a few days. And you get, you know, and then as you find out more about the Baron, you realize that Stefan is really the one that he's been keeping this guy alive this whole time. Wow. Sorry. Yeah, I jumped a bit, but he really.
Well, no, it's true. He does play sort of the archetype butler of the older, you know, Baron or, you know, master of the house, who really is the one that keeps everything running when his employer can no longer do it himself.
I think it's more than that,
this could be me projecting, but I feel like there's even a level of him emotionally supporting the Baron.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Andre confronts the Baron about the girl, and we learned the whole backstory of the late Baroness.
All right, now what happened to the Baroness? Was her death violent?
Yes, her death was violent.
How did she die?
You spare me nothing. My wife had died some years before, and I was lonely. Then one day in the village, I saw Ilse, a peasant girl who'd come to live there with her mother. Oh, I could have taken her. Nobles have taken the daughters of peasants since the beginning of time, but I loved her. And she became the Baroness von Lepp. Almost immediately afterwards, I was called away for military service, rebellion in the Polish province. I was gone for nearly a year. When the fighting was over, I hurried home to my bride. No one knew of my coming. I surprised her in her room. She was not alone. She laughed at me. Said her bed was not for me to find another. With my own hands, I killed her.
Yeah.
I'll be completely honest with you guys. There was a point in the film where the story completely lost me. So I'm putting it together as you're explaining it to me. And unlike Lydia, I actually could have used a second viewing of this film, because the story, there was a point where I didn't know. I enjoyed it, but I didn't know what I was watching after a while.
Yeah, I'll admit that same thing. I've watched it twice, and there's still a part that I still kind of scratch my head over towards the end when it all, you know, we'll get there. Yeah. When it all comes to a head, you kind of go, what?
Yeah.
Well, yes, let's keep going, because I'm curious if it's the point that I think you might be talking about, because I have an explanation for it.
Okay. Oh, good. Well, we get a little bit of a scene jump here, and we see Gustav meeting up with the girl along the seashore. He tells her that she's got to return to the sea, but Helena says that she can only do so when the sea enters the crypt. Then her job will be done. Of course, this is all just adding to the mystery. We have absolutely no idea what any of this means at this point. And here's the scene you were talking about, Lydia, where Stefan goes to see the old woman in her cabin.
I love this part. And yeah, and Andre says something about, oh, the old woman told me how to get here. And Stefan starts to say, wait, what old woman? What? And then he gets interrupted. And so I think there are moments in this movie where it could have been really good. I think that I think that the moments were there, but they were just so underplayed that you don't realize that there are actually bits that link this movie together. You're just left to think that it's just Andre wandering around. So I don't know if that's poor direction or if that's poor writing or if it's just poor editing. But I feel like there's more plot in this movie than they actually present on the screen.
I think you might be right. And I can't help but wonder if some of it has to do with the fact that, as we said in the intros here, that, you know, anything from 3, 4 or a half dozen people directed this film at any one time. And I can't help but wonder if there are moments that get lost just because of that.
Yeah, I think it'd be safe to speculate that's the case.
Well, Stefan, he spies through the window and sees this woman casting a dark spell on Helena.
Using Willy Wonka's tunnel, apparently. And it really, really, you know, caught me the second time I was watching it, and I kept thinking, what is it? He says something down the tunnel. And she's kind of doing the same thing. And I was like, they must be related.
Well, this spell was apparently to place Ilsa's spirit in Helena's body in order to exact revenge. Apparently, the old woman is a witch. And we still, at this point, don't know exactly what the witch is, what revenge this witch is talking about. And that's actually something I appreciate about the film, is that the main focus of the plot is something that you have to kind of piece together throughout the film. Now, whether or not you think it actually adds up to anything in the end, it can be debated, but I like that it's not just, oh, and here's what's happening, now let's just watch our characters go through the motions.
Right. Well, and this is the part, as you mentioned, Stefan comes in, Helena disappears, and I love this scene, this shot, I think, is my favorite, because the witch is, fiddling with her stuff, with her gadgets or whatever she's using to cast the spell, puts them away, and she turns toward the door, and Stefan is standing right there. And it's, mm-hmm. You get the impression for the first time, I think that's what made me think, oh, he really knows, this is not just a minion. Like, he's capable. He's a very capable person. And I love it because he says, I'm invited in, of course. And he just walks past her. Yes. I love it. It's like, ooh, it's like almost burn, Yeah. And, this is the part where he says, how long have you been here? And you, again, and I caught this more the second time I was watching it. She says, oh, about 2 months. And he says, no, you've been here a little over 2 years. Your name is Katarina. You were thrown out of the village because everybody thinks you're a witch. And you're like, oh, he really does know what's going on. So again, this is the part I think of the movie where I really wanted him to be the hero. I wanted him to, things to turn around, and suddenly for him to be the guy that, shows up like unexpectedly and turns everything around.
Yeah, in another film, this guy would have been the secret agent that's been undercover or something.
Exactly.
Right, definitely.
The way he kind of takes charge in these roles, where it's just whatever happens just doesn't really seem to faze him. He just takes it, he just rolls with it and everything. He reminds me of almost kind of like a John Steed of the old Avengers or something.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Well, we're back to Andre doing more walking and wandering as he explores the castle. And he finds his way into the Baron's chambers, where he hears Helena's voice begging him to help her.
I'm sorry. I just had a flashback. I wanted to say, Andre, come play with us, Andre. Come to Candy Mountain, Andre. yeah. If you haven't seen it, don't. But yeah, they get the same kind of thing.
Well, despite all this, Andre appears to have finally decided to leave because Stefan returns with a horse.
Well, what happens here, actually, a little bit of gap filling in. The Baron shows up and says, why are you in my room? Obviously, he doesn't say it like a me, but, he says it in a very Boris Karloff kind of way. And Andre says, oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was your room. And the Baron says, well, Stefan went to get you a horse, and I think it would save us both a lot of embarrassment if you leave as soon as he gets back.
Oh, that's right. I completely forgot about that. There was that's the craziest part. That's not even that scene. I think he leaves the Baron's room, and then there's another, wandering or something, and he walks by the room, and he hears voices, and he busts in.
Right. He hears the Baron.
And the Baron's what's the meaning of this? And that's where he, embarrasses Jack and tells him it'd be better if he left. Oh, I think you're right. Sorry.
And the Baron, and you do distinctly hear the Baron speaking, obviously, with Ilsa or Helena, whatever name you prefer to call her. And then when he opens the door, it's just the Baron in there.
Well, Andre is back riding along the beach, but Gustav on top of the cliff flags him down, but is attacked by that damn hawk.
Damn bird.
Who takes out Gustav's eyes. First, the poor guy can't talk. Now he can't see.
Oh, man.
And he stumbles and falls to the beach. With his dying words, he begs Andre to go back and help the woman.
She has seen you. She loves you. You must help her tonight. Her soul cries out for release. Go back.
So he does.
Yeah, well, like you do.
Yeah, like you kind of have to, I guess. Well, Andre finds Helena outside the old chapel, and he tries to get her to come away with him, but she disappears with a thunderclap. That was pretty cool. I don't know. So Andre returns. So Andre returns to the castle, and he sees the Baron making his way into his secret passage. So of course Andre has to follow.
Now I do have to ask: is that the part where he finds her in the what is it, the chapel? And he's asking her all these questions, and he says, you know, who told you, you know, that your name is Ilsa or is Helena? And she says, the old woman.
The dead.
I know. Well, no, that was my favorite part. Yeah. He's, you know, he's like, well, you know, who's here with you? And she's like, the dead. And he's like, well, how do you know? And she's like, the dead. And he's like, well, why can't you leave? And she's like, the dead. And he's just like, can you say anything besides that? And she's like, the dead. And you're like, okay, I guess not. But it's, she just keeps
not
saying.
Not quite that bad, but yeah.
Pretty close. The dead. And you're like, wow.
Do you think that Jack Nicholson and Sandra Knight were like in bed, like reciting like lines to each other? Like, you're not going to believe this dialogue we have tomorrow. Can you believe this stuff they're going to make us say to each other in front of the camera tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't even him at this point pretty much saying, well, you know, there's been great advances back in Paris about people with,
you
know.
And she goes, the dead. He says, I'll take you away with me. You'll be safe. And she goes, the dead. Oh, man. It's she says it 3 or 4 times.
I do appreciate the fact that Andre here is so in love with this woman that he's admitting the fact that she is probably insane, and yet he's still willing to take her away and help her.
And I was thinking about this at this moment, and I thought, this is why I've been single for so long. Because once upon a time, men were so desperate for a woman, they would even marry a woman that was obviously possessed by the dead. I wonder, though, over and over as I was watching this movie, what exactly about her drew him?
Well, she's very fetching. Sandra Knight, I mean, back me up, Chris. Sandra Knight is very fetching in this movie, wouldn't you say?
She has fantastic false eyelashes in this film. I did notice that.
It was the 60s.
It was very the 60s, yeah.
I think any woman has a slight advantage when she wears that, like, that low-cut peasant frock kind of thing going for there.
Well, you know, and being possessed by the dead. It's very attractive.
And the dead, yeah. Well, in the crypt, we find the Baron speaking with the rather ghostly Ilsa. And this apparition wants the Baron to do something, but he fears for his immortal soul.
Now, they did mention this. Stefan tells the witch that if she and Helena aren't gone by the next day, then he'll come and burn the house down himself and kill them both or something like that. Again, very powerful moment for Stefan. And she at some point says that Helena is going to carry out her revenge.
Right, and we don't know what that is yet.
We don't know, yeah, exactly. Well, and she says it at some point, but I think you're right. I think it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, no, we find it. That's pretty much the beginning of the climax of the film is when we find out all the little bits and pieces that everything's been building up to. At this point, though, you know, Andre bursts in, you know, what are you? You know, where are you? What kind of woman are you?
Who are you? Yeah. What?
But of course, she disappears yet again.
Like you do.
and then the Baron collapses, and Andre and Stefan play nursemaid to him.
And so this is the part where Stefan says, this has happened before.
Yes. He sometimes, yeah, he goes through these seizures, and a day or two, his mind will return. Andre, of course, being that he's the soldier and feeling Stefan is just the, you know, the butler, should follow any command, whether it's his whether it's Andre's house or not, tells him that he wants to see the crypt. So he and Andre head down to try to bust into Ilsa's crypt, but they can't get in. I think they need a hinges are rusted solid, so they need a crowbar. So they head back to the house or somewhere to get one, and they notice a light in the sealed room of the Baroness. So, of course, breaking into this room, they find absolutely nothing. And there's an interesting thing. They're in the room. It hasn't been touched in 20 years, supposedly. And they notice the crib in the corner. But anyway, Andre asked. The Baroness didn't have a child. And, of course, Stefan's like, well, not that I know of. And that's the end of that.
It is. Again, I feel like there's so much more plot to this movie than
something
we actually get to see.
Missing. Yes.
Well, and this is the part where Andre says, I think I can explain everything if you just let me. And the Baron bursts in and says, what are you doing in here? Hate your guts. Get out.
Right. Exactly.
To sum it up.
And this got the wheels turning. I was thinking, we never found out where the girl is from, or do we assume that this girl was perhaps the daughter of Ilsa's, or, because we don't know where she came from. We never got an explanation to that. So I kept waiting for that to happen, mm-hmm. and we never got
never
it. So all we have is we can guess and we can assume. That's about it. But yes, the Baron does burst in and catches them and makes Stefan escort Andre out at gunpoint. Again, Ilsa speaks from the grave in this room. And now we learn that she wants the Baron to kill himself so they can be together. And that's what he fears, because that's the greatest breaking of the Holy Covenant. You can't kill yourself. You'll be damned for eternity.
Very Catholic.
Yes, oh, very much. Well, Andre and Stefan have a scuffle. And, of course, Andre escapes. And he stumbles upon the old woman, who admits that she's behind it all to avenge her son, Eric.
Who we find out she's been living in his old house.
Yes, exactly. So apparently Eric was her son. Well, Andre and the old woman find Stefan, who tells him that the Baron did kill his wife, but in the struggle with Eric, it was the Baron who died. And for some inexplicable reason, Eric took the place of the Baron and eventually actually began to think he was the Baron.
And this is, again, the moment where you have to think about, okay, so Stefan has been keeping this up for 20 years, knowing that it was the Baron who died, not telling Eric who he is. And then you have to wonder, okay, so did Eric actually love Ilsa? Is that why he's taken this guilt upon himself? Does he feel that it's his fault that she was killed? All questions that never get answered.
Maybe, maybe not. See, and that's a question we'll get to in the very end here. I think at this point, Andre tries to get the old woman to...
She admits it. She says, well, after tonight, it won't matter because he's going to kill himself. Ha ha. And my revenge for my son's death will be complete.
Right. And then she discovered that her son is still alive and is indeed the Baron. And now he's off on his way to the crypt. And so they go to try to stop him. Andre and the old woman, he drags the old woman along. He tries to drag her into the chapel, but she's made her business with another, and she can't go into anything like the chapel. And she gets smited right there in the graveyard.
She does. As soon as she gets out of the graveyard, there it is. Boom, she's done. And she's just in a puff of fire and smoke.
Exactly. The Baron down in the crypt begins to flood the thing, because I think most crypts do have tunnels to the sea.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But you just... Yeah, it does.
Yeah, every crypt I've ever been in has a tunnel to the sea.
Mm-hmm. And it's confronted by Helena. Helena says that she's the spirit of Ilsa, giving his soul to the dark side in order to gain her freedom. And then she calls him Eric.
I thought she did.
Yeah. So this whole thing was about, getting the Baron to kill himself. But suddenly she knows that he was Eric.
See, now here's what I think, if you want to know.
So okay.
I think that Katerina the Witch really truly believed that she was getting her revenge on the Baron. But I think she was being used by the evil forces that she thought she was manipulating just to mess with her and basically screw up as many people's lives as they possibly could. And so the spirit of Ilsa, who of course is dead and knows that Eric is not the one that was killed, really does possess Helena and knows that Eric is the one that's alive, but is just trying to suck him in and basically, you know, claim yet another soul for the dark side. And again, this is more plot than we are given in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I am so lost, you guys. So totally lost.
So the question I have then is the crime that the Helena Ilsa is trying to get the Baron / Eric to pay for. Is it the crime? Is Eric the fact that Eric seduced her into breaking the vows of her marriage, and which then, of course, led to her death?
No, I genuinely think that it was that it's just the evil forces at work, just trying to get another soul.
Okay.
Obviously I'm speculating a little bit here, but if you have something so evil that it's messing around with the witch just to, it's like basically using her, knowing that her desire for revenge is pointless because the Baron's already dead. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense for, I think that it's just, you know, greedy demons.
Okay.
What's your name?
Again, yeah, speculation, because we aren't given very much plot information here, where they gloss over so much in this in a few minutes.
They really do. Well, the Baron and Helena have a struggle as the water begins to pour in, and Stefan joins the fray, and all three are swallowed up by the water. But fortunately, Andre manages to get through the crypt, and he, of course, manages to rescue Helena and nobody else.
the other two were guilty of adultery and possibly murder, so.
Yeah, guilty after the fact or something, yeah.
Andre has his priorities. He's trying to score. He's been trying to score the entire movie.
He has. I think it's worth mentioning that he probably deserves it at this point. He's done a lot of walking.
He carries Helena back up to the graveyard, leans her against a tree, and they kiss. But he's horrified to find that she's quickly decaying.
My favorite scene in the movie, right there.
Yes.
I wanted to yell, "Don't look at the ark! Don't look at the light!"
The movie ends on a shot of the melting face that actually strangely looks really tasty looking.
Kind of like candy apples.
Yeah, it's very caramel. Yes.
Yeah. And that is quite literally, then that is the end of the film.
The final dissolve, pun intended.
Oh, no.
Love it.
I do love it, though, because, he says, it's all over. It's all right. It's fine. And she says, it's over. I'm free. And then she says, oh, Andre. And they kiss. And then he pulls back and's like, bleh.
A mouthful of Ilsa.
Yeah. It looks a lot like she does have, like, caramel or something smeared all over her face.
So this was a film that the parts are greater than the whole.
That is very true. I think that's a very, very accurate way to put it.
It really is in this case. Often you get a little bit of not so much, you put it together and it's decent. This one is just, you got to really split it apart.
they missed a lot of explanation that would have helped it, I think.
Yeah, this was a fairly short film for the story that they were trying to tell. I think it clocked in at about an hour and 20 minutes.
And I feel like it ended abruptly. There's a lot of walking. And then all of a sudden, like the last 5 or 10 minutes is like a lot of action and a lot of, people running.
Running and fighting and drowning. Yeah.
Yeah. And up until then, it's been kind of, it's almost like, did you see where it went? No. Did you see where? Well, let's look over here. And then at this point, it's like, oh my gosh, it went that way. And then it ends.
What girl? That girl. What girl? Yeah.
There is no girl.
Yeah, that's the first 45 minutes of the film.
Yeah, it's strange because it's a slow movie and yet it's very cluttered. I think somebody earlier said it was overplotted. I mean, it's overplotted from the get-go.
It doesn't have enough room in this film, and it's just kind of just everything's kind of smooshed together. Important pieces are left on the cutting room floor. Maybe I would love to see you can't really see a director's cut because he'd get probably about 5 different opinions.
Yeah.
In this case, directors is the plural. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But a shooting, I'd love to see an actual unadulterated script and actually see the story that this film was, based from.
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
What I brought with me, guys, I actually did a little bit of homework for this episode. I actually have with me Roger Corman, An Unauthorized Life by Beverly Gray, this really terrific book on the life of Corman. And there's a chapter in it talking about the making of The Terror. And it basically talks about what we've talked about before, how not only was it the efforts of numerous directors doing all the exterior and interiors, as well as Corman himself doing some of the directing. But as most of you know, the legend is true about this film. Corman had a few days left of the set of The Raven, decided the set was so magnificent, he said, we should just create another movie because we've got this amazing set. And obviously it shows that the story was cobbled together from different ideas, different concepts. On one hand, the story is very simple. On the other hand, the story is ridiculously convoluted. I do have this beauty of a quote here, though, from Jack Nicholson himself when asked about the film. Nicholson said, I had a great time. It paid the rent. They don't make movies like The Terror anymore. It paid the rent right
yeah,
there.
That's, it sums it up right there.
Yeah.
That is awesome. And they were fantastic sets. I can understand Corman's want to get the most out of them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There are a couple shots where it's a high shot of Andre walking through the dining hall. And honestly, there's one rug in there that I thought, that's literally the size of my condo. Like, the whole yeah. rug is the size
oh,
of my
condo.
Oh,
it's enormous. It's fantastic. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Now, the film version that you can find most easily online is the as a public domain version, and it is a bit washed. The picture is not that great. Now, apparently, back in 2011, they restored an original 35 millimeter film.
Ooh.
And released it on, at the time, DVD. And so that is out there. And so that particular version wouldn't be considered public domain, but That is a version I am going to have to try to find. I've seen some photos online that I have to think are from that, and it looks gorgeous. And I wonder – I would really love to see this film restored from that 35mm
print. Honestly, I think this film is more beautiful than it is – I don't want to say entertaining – but enlightening, maybe. there is a lot of eye candy in this film, and I don't mean that in the, you know, the sense of, you know, hot men. I mean that in the sense of, I think there are a lot of beautiful shots, and you get the impression, even from the washed out version that I saw, that, you know, as you mentioned, the sets are incredible, and I think the settings are really beautiful, and there are a lot of long shots in this movie, so I would really like to see a restored version, if only just to be able to see, to really appreciate what it really looked like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
A great looking movie. It really, really is. And I mean, if nothing else, just for how good looking this movie is, for just the quality of the production, not to mention great performance by Dick Miller and a really good performance by Mr. Boris Karloff, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. I think it's, you know, considering some of the really bad, unwatchable drive-in fodder that Corman did around this time, like The Wasp Woman, this is actually it is a great movie. Or rather, we could say there's a great movie in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah, it is an interesting – what do you think of Roger Corman? Like Barry was saying, you think of the really cheesy stuff. You think of Carnosaur. You
yeah.
think of Sharknado – or not Sharknado. Excuse me, Sharktopus.
Yep. Thank you.
And there is a series of films through the 60s. This film is often wrapped up in the Corman Poe series, even though it has nothing to do with any of Poe's writing. But along with this, he did things for like the House of Usher, the Raven, all really interesting and neat gothic horror films that are all worth watching, if nothing else, just to see, I guess, a little bit see where a lot of these people got their starts in some cases, like Jack Nicholson, and for that matter, Roger Corman. And in some cases, see from the humble beginnings that they started, and see others where how bad they've fallen since.
Well, it is worth noting, I think. I had said that it seemed like this cast was very eclectic. I mean, exceptional performers, but eclectic in their background, sort of. But really, I think I think that the majority of these actors did go on to do a lot of horror, a lot of suspense. And I mean, you can see how they might have come out of something like this and gotten that reputation because, again, even though it's a little scattered, there are some really good performances out of them.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Well, any other closing thoughts on The Terror?
Just that there is no girl. That's it.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, then that is going to do us for this month of January 2014. Thanks for everything, Lydia and Barry.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you to the regular listeners of the podcast and welcome to any new listeners. I hope you to continue to download the future installments of Orphan Entertainment. or older episodes of Orphan Entertainment. They're all fun. And you can do that by subscribing through iTunes. And there, you, while you're there, you can rate us and leave a comment. If you want to get in touch with us with any suggestions, comments, or feedback, join us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/orphanedentertainment. And, of course, you can drop us an email at orphanedent@jonja.net. All the links will be in the show notes. So goodbye until next time, and once again, Happy New Year to everyone.
Is no girl.